Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
And good evening to you for Wednesday, July 9th, 2014. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly, and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening. Good evening. Glad to be here again, as always.
And tonight we're going to be talking about what is metaphysical humanism. And, of course, helping us behind the scenes is our producer, call screener, Michael Kelly. Welcome, son. Oops, forgot to unmute him. Well, we're going to have to do some producing, come to Jesus meeting on that one. Welcome, son.
Well, hi, everybody. It's great to be here. I just want to let everybody know that if anybody has any questions or comments, please just give us a call at 714-459-3973.
Very good. All right. So tonight we're going to do things a little bit differently. We normally would do our profession of beliefs, which is the nine principles of belief, but we are going to kind of consider those as part of the topic of what is metaphysical humanism. So before we get to that, just want to quickly say that Metaphysical Universe is a program, educational program, of now the International Society of Metaphysical Humanism. We empower the human spirit, we explore science and spirituality, and we also operate a couple of schools, the Metaphysics Institute, or you know, the long name, the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, IMHS, where you get your degree in a variety of different areas of metaphysics, spiritual counseling, life coaching, paranormal healing, and there are many others. For more information, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. We also operate the International College of Humanistic Science, ICHS, world.org, where you can take standalone courses or get certifications rather than degrees in spiritual counseling, life coaching, and paranormal science, and several others. So ICHSworld.org is the URL for that one. We appreciate everyone's time. Glad you could join us for those who are live with us, and we also appreciate those who are listening to the archives. We know your time is valuable, and we hope that you benefit from this. This is actually a very important topic. We've talked a bit about metaphysical humanism over the last few episodes here and there, just referring to it and mentioning it. But this is actually a milestone because it's been less than a month or about a month or so ago that we actually changed the name of the organization. It used to be the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, Inc., and we changed it to the International Society for Metaphysical Humanism, Inc., and that's just, it was a milestone. It was just a big leap in our progressive evolution. So we're kind of excited about that.
Well, and it also describes better, I think, what we do.
Yes, it does.
And what we're about. So that's what's exciting about it. We can broaden our audience with, you know, a different kind of feel.
And plus it gives a name to our members, you know, metaphysical humanists. So that's another advantage of that. And it just brings it now into something that people can identify with. Obviously, humanistic science is the same thing. Humanistic simply means pro-human. And our job is to build up people, you know, empower people. That's really what we do. And, you know, empower the human spirit. That's what we do. And so everything that we have created around this is designed to empower people. And, you know, it's not just a cliched expression. It's something that's desperately, sorely needed in this world is for personal empowerment, people empowerment, human empowerment. And that means understanding the human condition. It means really striving to understand reality, the world, the universe that we live in, consciousness, you know, the nature of existence, why people do what they do, why we do what we do. And it just goes on and on and on. So this program, we're going to discuss a little bit about what humanism typically is and some of the different branches of it, but we're going to focus really on our branch, metaphysical humanism.
You know, I might inject here also, Doug, that for many years I've considered myself to be a pantheist, meaning my understanding of pantheism is that all of nature, all of the earth, all of the universe, it's all interconnected. You know, that there is this life force that connects us all, which is truly a parallel in understanding metaphysical humanism.
Yes, and pantheism simply means that you don't believe in a god per se, that basically the divine is in everything, which is one of our principles of belief. Means that, and that's another way of saying consciousness, we're all connected through consciousness. So we'll be discussing that. In fact, let's just start with humanism. Let's talk a little bit briefly about humanism. Again, it means humanistic. It's about the human. It's, you know, for, it's people. It's about people, about the human condition. That's human, humanism, humanistic, rather than God or gods or anything outside of ourselves. So it's, the focus is on the human, and we believe and teach a human-centered philosophy, spiritual philosophy, rather than a God-centered spiritual philosophy. The organization is made up of atheists, agnostics, pantheists, panentheists, which is a different sort of thing as well. But basically, humanism in the world of belief is kind of the, and I, you know, I'm splitting hairs here, and there's always an exception to the rule. That's why I'm hesitating a little bit, because I want to make sure I express it properly. Humanism means pro-person. But in the world of belief, humanists are distinct from religionists. It's a different thing. Now, there is such a thing as religious humanism. There's all kinds of humanisms. There's secular humanism. There's progressive humanism. There's just a number of them. I mean, you can do an online search and come up with a whole bunch of them, and I'm not going to name them all. I'm not going to go into them. I do want to make some contrast, though. With metaphysical humanism, we are, in terms of religious, we are an atheistic organization. In other words, we don't focus on a spiritual philosophy from Christianity, Islam, anything else. It's devoid of God. We don't do God, you know. And people can believe what they want. A lot of people call the universe God. A lot of people call consciousness God, the divine, whatever. We just don't use the term. So we don't worship any kind of God. In fact, we don't worship anyone. Now, some of the religionists out there will say, well, humanists worship themselves. That's not true. That's really not true for humanists. I mean, it's true for narcissists, but it's not true for humanists in general. This is not part of the plan. They don't worship themselves. We don't worship anybody. Metaphysical humanism, we don't worship anybody. We draw attention to the power of the inner person, the higher self, and that's what we focus on.
You know, I might just also add that the reason we don't use that God word is so that we don't confuse, you know, people who believe that there is an actual supreme entity, supreme being, versus, you know, the God force or that energy force that we're all connected with. And, you know, we could go on and on about this in quantum physics, but, you know, we are connected by an energetic force field. And it's just that we don't want to confuse anybody, so we just don't use the word. I don't really find the word God as kind of offensive as I used to at one point, but because I understand what people mean when they say that divine energy, that God energy. Mm-hmm. However, religionists do believe that there's somebody pulling the strings. And you know, it always goes in the favor of somebody who wins, and you know, na-na-na-na-na if you lose. You know, and then, but who started the crap in the first place? So there's, you know, not a critical thinking to tie, you know, all these other little thoughts together. So, you know, I can't imagine that there's somebody up there being a puppeteer. It just doesn't.
Right. It doesn't stand to reason.
There's no reasoning to it. It makes no sense. But it does make sense that we are a product of our own energy and our own thoughts, albeit a collective. Because, you know, we're not driving down the road by ourselves. You know, there's a whole bunch of traffic here, and then there's lots of intersections, and everybody wants the green light.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's to understand that we are that kind of interconnection. And just because somebody is, you know, kind of winning today or losing today or whatever else, it has nothing to do with somebody out to get you. You know, and we try to make this really, really clear. You know, sometimes stuff just happens. You know, you didn't get to the intersection on time. You know, and then we're all just people, and we're just getting through life. So
yeah, or a tornado, you know, takes out two homes on a block but spares another one. It just stuff happens. It has nothing to do with any kind of a God person.
Not at all. So you know, we just try to make that clear. That's all.
What we've described here, basically, that is pretty common to the various variations of humanism. Humanists don't believe in God, and I'm not talking about religious humanists, I'm just talking about humanists in general, are atheistic, agnostic, and otherwise, but they're not religious. So that's a real common denominator. Now, there's also a big part of this humanism, which is secular humanism. Secular humanists are far more, stringent in their belief system, meaning there is no room for the afterlife. There is no such thing as psychic ability. There is no paranormal. There is nothing beyond what you see here. That's determinism. And if you're not familiar with some of these words like materialism and determinism, look them up. Do an online search. Basically, materialism is what you see is what you get. Determinism means that things were predetermined. It's almost preordination. But many secular humanists are materialists and determinists. There's nothing beyond this life, and when you die, you're dead, that's it, so make it count now, is pretty much what secular humanism does. Now, with metaphysical humanism, we don't subscribe to that because, you know, secular humanists say there's no compelling evidence for life after death. That couldn't be further from the truth. That is just got its roots in mainstream scientism, and it's just not true. There is compelling evidence. There's a lot of it. You know, shared death experiences, which is related to near-death experiences, all but prove it. So there is a lot of compelling evidence for that. So one of the big divergences that we with metaphysical humanism take from many other forms of humanism is we do allow for life after death, and we do believe in dualism, meaning that we are made up of a mind and a body, you know. The mind is our consciousness. The mind is not located in the brain, which is what secular humanists and materialists basically believe. So let's talk about our nine principles of belief and kind of use that as a guide to further explain what metaphysical humanism is. The first one is of our nine principles of belief, and they are available at our website, which is metaphysicalhumanism.org, metaphysicalhumanism.org. You can look these up. Just look for the principles of belief. You'll see them. The first one is, as sentient and evolving human beings, we not only believe in practicing and living by the principle do no harm, but also in the principle of do right, thus enhancing the vibrational level of humanity. Now, these two principles are the cornerstone of everything we do. Do no harm, do right. Now, of course, religionists will criticize humanists and say that they don't have the moral compass that the Bible provides. And that is honestly a misnomer. And here's a powerful statement that I want everyone listening to remember. You know, religionist support will say that, you know, the morality of religion, you know, and my question to them is, well, where did religion get its morality? And the answer, of course, they'll say, well, from God, and my answer is from humans. So here's the big statement, the heavy thing I want you to remember. The only moral value that religion has is the moral value given to it by moral people. I'm going to repeat that. The only moral value that religion has is the moral value given to it by moral people. And now we enter metaphysical humanism, or any kind of humanism, really, because most humanists are very moral people. They have a moral compass. They have good intentions. They believe in the power of us to solve our problems, to take care of ourselves. And all humanists really espouse personal responsibility, which we do quite a bit, and we'll get to that in our principles of belief. So when we talk here in our principles of belief about doing no harm and doing right, those are the two most important moral principles there are. Think about it. Religions say, well, Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that's a good start, but that's not original to the Bible. Do no harm, do right. If you just follow those two principles,
It's not just important to do no harm, because a lot of people's belief in doing no harm can mean apathy.
Yes.
But if it's followed with do right, then you're provoking thought to what is the right thing. So I don't want to do anybody any harm, but what's the correct action here?
Well, there's so many examples of if we just do no harm, we could end up just being passive. Well, we're not pacifists, we're activists. We're not terrorists, We're not militant activists, but we do stand up for the human race. We stand up for what's right, for good principles. It's like the examples over in Pakistan where, the family doesn't like what the kids are doing, the adult kids, and they'll just kill them. And, police stand by and watch. And that's unconscionable.
Well, we can't even go there.
No, we can't. But there are other examples of when we're walking down a street and somebody's being mugged, we do nothing. Well, we're not getting involved. We're not doing right.
You see, and that's interesting because it doesn't mean you have to, jump in and break up a fight,
right,
or anything. But it does mean that you can participate in life by calling, an emergency number or yelling for somebody to call a 911 number. See, and this is where I call it the, in another kind of mode is the law of participation. That as we encounter things, we are obligated. The fact that we have encountered it means to participate in it, but there are so many variables of participation. So it's, we had a student not too long ago write that in her children's school, she started putting in an extra sandwich, for the kids who didn't have a lunch. Rather than being involved in some hot lunch program or getting involved in, political parent groups, she just wanted to do something right. You see, and that's a really good thing. And I just thought it was quite brilliant. But in another case where you're seeing an act of violence, you just call somebody who can take care of that, who has the authority to take care of that. So there's so many variables here about doing the right thing, but still standing true in your do no harm.
And I'm glad you brought up that, because I was just looking for that in that story, and I found it. Janine is her name, the student, and it was brilliant. And she talks about that their school where her kids go, they have 13 orphanage children, as well as many others who only get a meal at school because they live in situations where their parents are unable to feed them, so they solely rely on receiving a meal at school. I mean, that's terrible in its own right. But she basically sat down and said, we can help, and she starts sending extra sandwiches to school with her kids, and she passively mentions it to other parents. They start doing it, and it just kind of catches on. Well, there's an example of doing something right. You could say, well, the school will take care of them, the government will take care of them, and they don't. So there's a great example, a beautiful example.
Sorry, we had Dr. Dan mention in the chat room that he was mugged in 1996 and nobody helped. And I just wrote back that it's terrible to feel victimized twice.
That's right.
Really, because that's what it is. It's not a matter of... we have to have an empathy and to restore an empathy. And empathy doesn't mean to say, how would I feel? Empathy means to imagine that there are feelings and to do the right thing, to step it up. So somebody is getting mugged and you do nothing because, why, you're scared or you're terrified or it's none of my business or, you know, then, I mean, you've just disjointed yourself from empathy. And empathy is part of that connection. To me, sympathy is very, it's inert. It doesn't move. Sympathy says, oh, I'm sorry to hear that, mm-hmm. and kind of goes away. Empathy imagines. Now, compassion, if we take that up just a little smidgen, then it's having a compassion. So it's that passion for humanity, the passion for ourselves that connects us in our dynamic of empathy. And that's just my view of it in my language that, you know, that I use in dynamic with people. But when we do nothing, we are essentially victimizing people with our, you know, apathy.
Mm-hmm.
And it that just adds fuel to people being so fearful, and we live in such a fearful world. So in order to kind of counteract that is just to, in very small ways, become more participatory, whether it's giving a sandwich out at a lunch or, you know, oh, geez, there's something bad happening, and everybody has a cell phone these days, and if you don't have yours and your battery went dead, somebody next to you has one and says, call 911. You know, it's pretty simple now.
So metaphysical humanism is about doing no harm and doing right. And remember that the only moral value that religion has is the moral value given to it by moral people. So the point is, the religion's irrelevant. The only moral value that people have is the moral value that they choose to have. And you don't need religion to be moral. That's just a misnomer. That's just a false cry from the religious side. Be moral. Do the right thing. Do no harm. The second principle of belief, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit to ultimately triumph in the face of any dilemma. The answers we seek already exist within us. We invoke and exert the counselor and guru within. And the first part of that, we can overcome anything. I mean, that's just historic. We all know that. We can, as a race, as a species, we've overcome everything to get to this point as a species. So we can overcome, you know, if you're facing tough problems, adversities and all that, remember that adversity is nothing more or anything less than a state of disorder. You figure out what's in a state of disorder, you put it back into its proper order, the adversity goes away. So remember that. So we can overcome. The thing is the answers are within us. I have known people who search their whole life looking for the answers only to discover that they were within them at that point all along. And yes, we have to go through experiences to figure that out, but you don't need to go through a lifetime to figure that out. Everything you need is within you. All the answers are there. That doesn't mean you can't seek advice. Doesn't mean you shouldn't grow and learn from others. But learn from you, too. You'll never stop getting to know yourself. You never do. You always can learn something more about you. So seek your own counsel. Be your own guru.
That doesn't mean you can't ask for help. It
right.
doesn't mean that you can't seek out counsel in certain situations. But if I have done my job well or hopefully correctly, I have helped you to self-empower. You know, whatever kind of dilemma or crossroads you're at, that we add a new thinking skill, a new way of looking at the self and tapping into your own power. And we may or may not talk again. Sometimes I think I talk myself out of a job, but the point is then I've done my job. And next time, there's always going to be another time when we say, gee, I don't know what to do in this kind of situation. And then, you know, we can tackle that. But if we do our jobs together, we help to empower each other and add to our thinking, you know, and our abilities to think.
Very good. So be your own guru. Be your own counselor. Find the information. You know, have the attitude, how hard can it be? Look for it. Keep moving forward until you find what you're looking for. Find the answers that you need. Figure it out. And don't forget about the 180 principle. Sometimes the solution that you're looking for lies outside of your belief system. That's another nugget for you right there. That one little anecdotal thing can save you hundreds of thousands of dollars. It really
years.
Can.
In 20 years of counseling.
No kidding. Sometimes the solutions you're looking for lie outside of your belief system. And so you have to do a 180 on it. What's the absolute wrong thing to do to solve this problem? Write it down. What shouldn't you do to solve this problem? Write it down. Look contrary. It's like the fly at the window, the fly just beating its wings, trying to get outside. And all it has to do is turn around 180 degrees and fly out through the open door behind it. Well, sometimes we're like that fly at the window. And how many dead flies do you see at a window? You don't want to be a dead fly at a window. So really look at it from all directions. 180 it, paradox it is what I call it. It's sometimes the only way to get out there is to turn around and go the opposite direction. And sometimes you got to do that. Sometimes the solution you're looking for lies outside of your belief system. You may think that a particular solution is wrong. I did once. I thought it was wrong to get divorced. Well, it turns out that was the only solution to a terrible problem. So, and it saved lives, two that are here tonight. So, you know, look for that. All right, let's get on with the third principle of belief. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems and believe the roots of those solutions lie in exploring, understanding, and empowering the human condition. This is a humanistic concept, and it is part of metaphysical humanism, responsibility. Folks, we get ourselves into this mess. We can get ourselves out of this mess. It requires healthy thinking, a healthy spiritual philosophy, and that's what these nine principles of belief make up. We are responsible and must take responsibility for ourselves. You can't hand over ownership of you to a mythical being in the sky because you'll never get anywhere. You have to assume and accept personal responsibility for where you're at. You are where you're at because of you. Because of choices you've made, decisions you've made. You may say, well, gee, so-and-so did this to me. I didn't ask for that. No, you didn't, but part of your energy signature drew them into your life. That's just who you were at the time. So I'm not saying you're responsible. I'm not saying to blame yourself, to feel guilty, to all that kind of stuff. I'm saying that you made certain decisions, and you are where you are because of the decisions, choices you've made. It is true for all of us.
Or you got stuck in traffic. You have to get unstuck in traffic.
Yeah. Look, find a way. Find a way to figure those things out, but accept responsibility for yourself. You know, do this. Go stand in front of the mirror and say, I'm looking at the person responsible for my future. Make a little sign. Put it on your mirror. I am looking at the person responsible for my future. And if I'm responsible for my future, then I'm also responsible for my past and my present. You want a better future, make better decisions, make better choices. If you don't want to make a decision, that's fine. That, of course, is a decision in itself. But if you don't want to make choices, then they'll be made for you by someone else.
But we also choose how we respond. We're just, most of the time, this is what we're learning in consciousness, is to be aware that we have responded a particular way that caused another response. So that when you're responsible for your past, it's not what was done to you. It's how you responded and how you can learn to respond differently and be proactive at the same time.
So, metaphysical humanism is about responsibility, taking responsibility for where we're at, including human social problems, and correcting those things. The fourth principle of belief is we embrace the differences that make all human beings unique, recognizing that we all come from star material and are therefore equal, irrespective of heritage, beliefs, gender, or gender preference. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. I mean, that's another humanistic concept, is equality. You know.
And we have the science to back that up.
Yeah. There should never be a patriarchal system or even a matriarchal system. Everybody's equal. There is no there should be no inequality between the genders. There should be no inequality between the different heritages or ethnicities. You know, we're all one race. There's not various races on this planet. We're all one race, the human race. There are different ethnicities, different heritages, different places that we came from. But in reality, we all came from the same place. We have one ancestry. We live on one planet. There is one race. And we have one destiny as a species. And that's forward. That's upward. That's evolutionary. That's what that means by one destiny. We're going the same direction. And at this point, I am optimistic that we've gotten over that hump of self-destruction. And I think that we can make this happen. But we have to stop this hate. In fact, I want to do bumper stickers. Don't hate. Stop hating. Just don't hate. Everybody hates this, hates that. You know, you're a woman, so I hate you. You're a man, you know, men suck. You know, you're gay, you know, so I hate you. Whatever it is, stop it. Just stop.
Which is fear. It's all fear.
It is.
Hate comes from fear. I
yes.
believe that totally. We always fear what we don't understand, and it's just easier to hate.
Well, it is, and it's easier to hide by the you know, the internet, a screen, a computer screen, and say big things. Be who you are. We've been talking about that. Know who you are, why you are here. Be who you are. Do no harm. Do right. Don't allow other people's behavior to dictate your behavior. You know, behave the way you should for no one other than you. Be decent. Have integrity. Be honest. And do all those things for you, because that's, you respect yourself enough to be that way. And that also includes equality, you know, not inequality, not intolerance. It's okay. You know, people want to believe in whatever they want to believe. I don't care. Just don't kill people. You know, don't hurt people because of it.
Do no harm, do right.
Yeah. Believe what you want. Just don't hurt people. You know, and that's the big thing about that I have, the gripe against religion that I have, is because, look, you want to believe in God? I don't care. Really, I don't. Just don't go on with your children about how they're sinners and they need the Redeemer and they're imperfect, yada, yada, yada. Don't do that, because that's doing harm. That's disempowering people. You want to believe that God's going to come sometime and take care of things? Good luck. It ain't going to happen. It's now time to step up to the plate, accept responsibility, and let's fix our problems. You still want to believe that somebody created all this? Fair enough. They, for all I know, they could have. I don't know. Nobody can prove it one way or another. It's unfalsifiable. So because we can't prove it, let's focus on what we can do, and that's the point. So one planet. One race, one ancestry, one destiny. That is metaphysical humanism. Number five, rather than a supreme being, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. We've kind of already discussed that a lot. But, you know, even secular humanists, they don't even go there. There's nothing there. There's nothing beyond that. But we do recognize the energy of consciousness, the connectedness of all of us. All right, moving along a little bit to number five. Number six, we believe the nature of a human being encompasses both the physical and spiritual aspect, and that human consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion. Thus, death opens a new chapter of life and conducts the individual into a higher state of existence. Now, obviously, religionists believe in life after death. Secular humanists do not. Many humanists do not. They take, as I said before, a materialistic point of view, which means this is it. There is no dual nature. You're flesh and blood, and that's all you got. Your mind is a product of the chemical processes in the brain. That's it. And they can be very staunch. And some of these people, or many of them, are scientists. And they say, oh, I don't believe in that hocus-pocus stuff. And they really put it down. What they don't understand is that they are showing their own lack of open-mindedness. Now, I'm with them. Don't go way out on a limb. Don't go so far out in orbit. You need warp drive to get there. If you're going to believe something, fine. But have a good, compelling, and reasonable basis for your belief. It took me quite a while before I started really believing that, yes, consciousness does survive the death of the physical body. And why is that? Is that because I heard it somewhere? No. Is that because I was taught it in religion? No. It's because that's what my personal experience and in research and investigations into the paranormal showed me. Plus, when you factor in near-death experiences, and of course, you know, the naysayers will say, well, that's just oxygen deprivation in the brain. Well, they cannot explain shared death experiences. If you don't know what those are, buy the book Glimpses of Eternity by Dr. Raymond Moody. Beautiful book. It only came out like 4 years ago. Beautiful book. You can't explain those. That's where people around the dying person have the near-death experience, so to speak. They share in that near-death experience.
But I have had such an experience. It's amazing.
And so you can't explain that with oxygen deprivation of the mind, or the brain, rather. So, and that's just one area. There's also the survival hypothesis, that energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be transformed, based on the first law of thermodynamics. So there are a lot of different pieces that you got to fit into this jigsaw puzzle, and the evidence suggests that, yes, consciousness does survive death of the physical body. Nobody can prove it one way or another. The staunch naysayers who think they're so high and mighty and put it down, they can't prove it otherwise. It's unfalsifiable. But we do keep an open mind to this sort of thing.
That's the important thing, keeping an open mind.
And that also comes up in a later, in a subsequent principle of belief. All right, so let's go on to number 7. So metaphysical humanism, yes, we do believe in the dual nature of the person. We believe that the person survives death of the physical body, consciousness moves on, and goes into a higher state of existence, whatever that may be. I can't tell you anything beyond that because we simply don't know. The rest of it's speculation, a lot of it's speculation. But we do have reasonable, compelling evidence that life does go on. Number 7. We believe in self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will, and that these three synergistically create the goal of self-completeness, which is another word for self-actualization, self-realization. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, respect for free will, those are three basic skills, elements absolutely necessary for success in anything you do in life. Here's the deal. Your spiritual counselor, doesn't matter who comes to you, the odds are very high that they have an imbalance in these areas of the life leadership paragon. That's what these elements make up, the life leadership paragon. You will not find that anywhere else. That is a tenet of metaphysical humanism. Self-acceptance, it's out of balance with most people. You bring that into balance and wonderful things happen. The next biggest area that people have an imbalance in is respect for free will. They're control freaks. They want to control this, they want to control that. They want to give unsolicited advice. And you bring that into balance, bring that back into its proper order, and wonderful things happen. And when you bring self-acceptance and respect for free will into balance, into a healthy balance, the cool thing is self-responsibility also comes into balance. And when those three balance out, it synergistically creates self-completeness, meaning you are complete within yourself. You don't, quote, need, unquote, anything outside of you to complete you, to make you whole, to make you perfect. And all of those things are basic tenets, beliefs of metaphysical humanism. And where are we at? 8. We believe in the value of practical education in metaphysics, metapsychology, and life skills as a means of empowering the human spirit and enhancing the human condition. We maintain an open but grounded mind to potential realities as yet undescribed by science. Now,
you know, we might just say there's a difference between mainstream science and true science.
Yes.
At this point. Mainstream is it's just kind of what you're reading in the club, what they like to give to you. But true science is exploratory, you know, and it pursues and continues to, find more information and try to put it together. So it's a truer science because it's open-minded.
Good, and that's true. You know, there's only one point to science, exploration. You have to keep an open mind. And it just blows my mind, saying mind too many times, it blows my mind how many closed-minded scientists there are. And yet they'll turn around and believe in things like, oh gosh, I don't know, dark energy, dark matter. And I think those are absolutely believable concepts. Why? Can they see dark energy, dark matter? No, that's why they call it dark. They can't see it, but they can infer that it is there. That's what I'm talking about with life after death. There are too many things that happen that you can't explain. So we must infer that something is going on. And that also happens to be true with UFOs, with spirits and ghosts, with Bigfoot and other cryptids. Something's going on. Can we objectively prove it yet? No. But something's going on. You can't close your mind. Oh, that's just for those pseudoscience people. That's for those metaphysical crazy people. No. No. Metaphysics is all through science. Metaphysics is not a crazy thing. It's been around for thousands of years. It's everything. It's religion. It's science. It's everything. It's the study of consciousness and existence.
Which means if we even take into consideration some quantum physics principles, there is such a thing as time travel. Mm-hmm. We don't really know how it works, but they're starting to get a handle on the possibility that it does exist.
Well, of course it does.
That's moving toward the truer science.
So we remain open to possibilities not yet described by science, but we don't go way out on a limb without a compelling, reasonable basis. That is,
I know, you always knock the wind out of me, Doug.
Why?
You always knock the wind out of, oh, wow, I have this great idea. You know, or look at this UFO, you know, video.
I knock the wind out of you, sorry.
Sorry.
Yes.
You know, and it's the beauty of being able to kind of filter out our wishes, our desires, our, you know, wanna believe kind of stuff, and getting down to something a little more isolated, sensible, and then you can say, now there's no explanation that could be. That's the beauty of having that critical thinking there, too.
So we remain open, that's meant to possibilities, yet we're not credulous. And that is metaphysical humanism. The ninth principle of belief is we believe that discovering the true nature of consciousness and human existentialism will ultimately have a positive impact on human evolution and peaceful coexistence, meaning that once people finally get this healthy spiritual philosophy, guess what happens to our relationships, to getting along, to tolerance? They all improve. Once people become more aware, they improve. Once the world gets that there is no God up there telling you to kill everybody, things will improve. That is important thing. And it really is, you know. So we've talked about a lot of these different things here. And we got to spread this. I mean, people need to understand this is healthy. This is not foo-foo stuff. This is not crazy stuff. This is grounded, objective, sensible, reasonable stuff. And it's the healthiest spiritual philosophy on the planet. And I'll keep saying that till the day I pass on to whatever's next. Now, I just have one request of CNN.
Have us on the show.
Well, I would like to ask CNN, seriously, can you do us a favor? Run one less Justin Bieber story and just maybe highlight this healthy stuff here. Just one less Justin Bieber, please.
I'm so with you on that.
And so, you know, give us a little FaceTime here. Give us a little time. All right. We appreciate you joining us for the show. Hopefully this has explained a little more about metaphysical humanism. And join us next week and the week after, because we talk about different aspects of metaphysical humanism. We are different. We are strong. We've got about 500 members around the world so far. Maybe it doesn't sound like a lot to a lot of people, but, you know, that's an accomplishment, and we want to grow. So tell other people.
And we also want to tell people, if you want to hop on over to Wellness Universe on Blog Talk Radio, where IMHS graduate Dr. Dan Jablonski has his new program premiering tonight. So stick around a little bit and click on over to Wellness Universe.
Wellness Universe, do a search on Blog Talk Radio. And we wish Dr. Danny all the success in the world for that. Thanks to Michael Kelly for helping us behind the scenes. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow.